How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 81 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder, and you can subscribe to the podcast there and leave a review once you're on that page also. Hopefully 5 stars. Find us on audioboom.com too, and you can log on to normantranscript.com, and you can check out my blog, Thunder Road. That's under the sports tab on the site, and you'll find Thunder Road right there, and you can check out all my Thunder coverage right over there. That's just easy blog, easy way to keep all of it. I'm on every day of the week, as always, Monday through Friday. Second to last show of the week right now. Thunder just lost to the Raptors, 112 to 102. They're now 6-2 on the season. Russell Westbrook's 36 points, 7-7. Steven Adams, 14-12. I assume you have access to the internet if you're listening to this, so I'm just going to let you look up the rest of the box score. One thing to talk about, DeMar DeRozan was ridiculous. 37 points, 13-22 shooting. 15 free throws. I'll give you that box score line just for free. You don't need to look that one up. He was amazing. He was so awesome in this game. The thing about DeRozan, he's kind of breaking the game right now because the Thunder want him taking pretty much, aside from the fouls, he got to the line 15 times, and obviously that's a great number. And he's really good at getting to the line. He's really good at baiting fouls. He's good at finishing around the rim, you know, with his athleticism and really his skill set around the rim too. And that kind of stuff is great and efficient. But I mean, for the most part, like DeRozan, he shot really well, 13-22. That's great. I mean, he had 37 points on 22 shots. It's obviously a great night. But he was taking shots the Thunder want him to be taking. And he's been doing that all year. He's been taking shots teams want him taking all year. He's shooting 48% from mid-range coming into this game. I don't know what he's at right now. But he was knocking down. He was 10 for 15 on contested shots. That's a crazy percentage. So many of these shots were like long twos where Andre Roberson or Kyle Singler were just right in his face. And they were off the dribble and they were off balance and often late in the shot clock. And they were swishing in or he was banking them in. He was making these shots where I was just like, how? He's got to start missing at some point. He's just so outrageously hot to start this season. And what's crazy is DeRozan's obviously a good scorer. Never been a three-point shooter, never been much of a shooter. He's decent inside the arc, but he's still 38% in his career from 16 feet out to the three-point line. 38. This to coming into tonight, so I'm recording this around 1 a.m. Thursday morning. Coming into that Wednesday game against the Thunder, he was at 48. 10 percentage points higher. Like, that can't continue. I mean, unless he just got way better. That can't continue. I'm chalking this up to a hot streak until we see this over a larger sample size. But man, what a hot streak this is because he's on fire. He's leading the league in scoring. He's got to be up over 34 points a game right now, which is just a crazy, crazy way to start the season. He's obviously a good player. I don't know if quite anybody is this good from mid-range. If any shooting guard or wing player is quite this good because the shots that he's making are crazy, and they're the shots that the defense wants him taking, contested long twos. Like, the Thunder didn't play great defense tonight by any means. They weren't good at getting, they misrotated a lot. When guys came off the ball a couple of times, they had miscommunications, actually more than a couple times, a few times. They had miscommunications where two guys followed the same person when they weren't supposed to do that. You know, one guy was supposed to follow another guy, and they'd end up either with somebody open or the ball would get swung around the perimeter and, you know, Toronto would end up with an open shot. That's how Patrick Patterson ended up with like two or three open three-point attempts just because of that exact scenario. And the Thunder did that a few times tonight. There were miscommunications all over. The defense wasn't great. But for the most part, like, Andre Roberson was doing a good job on DeRozan when he had his chance, and Grant had his chance, and Singler had his chance. And, like, I didn't think they did that bad of a job on DeRozan. I really didn't. I just thought, you know, Billy Donovan said after the game, sometimes you just got to tip your cap. And it, this was one of those times. Like, sometimes, like, all a defense can do is put a player or an opposing offense in a position where they're consistently taking bad shots. You can't block a guy's shot every single time. So all you can do is put them in a position to where they're taking bad shots. DeRozan, by the metrics, was taking bad shots. He was just making them. So that's when you tip the cap. Rest of the defense, not great. On DeRozan, like, it was okay, but yeah, he was awesome. He was awesome. Toronto, on the other side, was so aggressive on Russell Westbrook. Man, like, we've seen teams collapse in on the paint against the Thunder. Obviously, of course we have. Like, that's something that we're going to see all year because the Thunder don't really have shooters. And when you don't really have shooters lining the outsides of your offense, it's a lot easier, and defenses can feel a lot more comfortable helping off those shooters and falling into the lane. It's something we've seen all year. Heck, we saw the first night of the year against Philly. Guys on Philly were just falling into the lane and following Westbrook and collapsing around him. I think it was more exaggerated with Toronto than it was in any other game this year. I think that's probably true. Because Toronto wasn't just, in terms of just being uber, uber aggressive in the way they were defending Westbrook. Because it wasn't just guys falling into the lane the second Westbrook would try to penetrate the middle. It wasn't just that. They did a good job pushing him towards the sidelines. And once they did get him on the sideline, they were trapping the hell out of him. And Russ wasn't always passing out of it. At the very least, they did a really good job with it. It would stall the offense. You know, the Thunder would have to reset up another play later in the shot clock than they wanted to. At the very most, it just made them uncomfortable. The Thunder wasted a few possessions with that kind of stuff, with just Russ being driven to the sideline and Toronto coming over and having a really nice trap. I thought Dwayne Casey had a nice game plan on this one. And Toronto executed it well. They really did. That's a good team. Look, there's no shame in losing a game to the Toronto Raptors. Like, this team won 56 games last year. There's no shame in that. And on the offensive end, like, Patterson hitting shots and Carroll hitting shots, like, those guys hitting shots, like, those guys, pretty much all of the really good players on Toronto have gotten off to a really slow start this year. I mean, Carroll was shooting under 30% coming into this game. And Patterson was the same. That wasn't sticking. These things regress. They were 6 games into the season. Now they're 7. Those things are going to even out. You regress to the mean. Sometimes you progress to the mean. That's what's going to happen with those shooters. Those guys are getting good looks. That's a really good offense. It's been a really good offense for a few years now. When DeRozan is just playing out of his mind, it's even better. So those guys are going to get their looks, and they got their looks. And the Thunder left them open a few times, and they hit their shots. You know, it's the theory of due, right? They were due for good games, and the Thunder certainly didn't help their cause, but they were due for good games, and they had them. they had them, and they just happened to be against the Thunder. But there's no real trouble in losing a game to Toronto. I wonder if other teams are going to try to mimic that Toronto defensive strategy, just being even more aggressive with Westbrook, because if you get the ball out of his hands, like, all Toronto wanted to do was just get the ball out of Russell Westbrook's hands. And once they got the ball out of his hands, you know, I guess they considered those defensive possessions a victory. Because Russell Westbrook's not creating shots anymore. Now you got Oladipo or you got somebody else having to create a shot, and that's obviously way more preferable for a defense. So I wonder if we're going to see progressively throughout the year now. You know, I wonder if teams are going to really ratchet it up. We know guys are going to be aggressive on Westbrook, obviously, but I wonder if there's a progression throughout the year where teams keep trying to push the limits. All right, how aggressively can we defend Westbrook before it really backfires on us? And I don't think there's one uniform answer to that. different rosters have to defend different ways because you have different strengths and weaknesses on every single defense, depending on your personnel, depending on your coaching, depending on the way that you usually scheme, depending on the system that you run, all that stuff. You have different strengths and weaknesses, and there's not just one uniform answer. Oh, this is exactly how aggressive a team can play. This is the exact kind of stuff that a team can run. It's going to change, but teams that can play a certain way, I wonder how they're going to go at it. It's going to be an interesting trend to follow for the Thunder this year, and it's certainly going to have an impact on their offense. There's no question about that. Thunder have the Clippers on Friday. That should be interesting. Clippers, they have been on a mission. Their only loss was to that Thunder team when they played them last Wednesday. So they're playing 9 days later. Clippers crushed Portland. They crushed Portland. They crushed San Antonio in San Antonio. Best record in the West right now. Number one defense in the league. Really good defense. And capable of being really aggressive. They've done it before. So, historically they like to bait Russell Westbrook into those mid-range shots. Sag back on pick and rolls. Be interesting. Be interesting to see how they go at it on Friday. Because Doc Rivers is known to adjust. Some quick Twitter questions before we go. First one from Douglas Kirk Lane. It's a good name, Douglas Kirk Lane. I like that name. Less of a question and more of a statement. Adams needs to shoot more than his average 8 field goals. Needs to be at least 10 to 12. I wouldn't say that's less of a question. I would say that's not a question at all. And I wouldn't say that's more of a statement. I would just say it is a statement. But it does address an issue that I agree with. Look, you can't just indiscriminately say, I think sometimes we look at a game and we have a tendency to just look at box scores and say, all right, you know, Steven Adams took X amount of shots. He shouldn't be there. He needs to be here. Or Russell Westbrook took 26 shots and he shouldn't be at 26. He should be at 21. But these shots come in the flow of a game. You can't necessarily just look at it after and say, all right, well, this is a more ideal number because things happen throughout a game that influence the number of shots and influence the occurrences that happen throughout, you know, the flow of a game. Those things aren't, there's randomness, you know? They're not predetermined. That being said, I agree with the premise. I think part of this falls on the Thunder and that I do need to get Adams more consistently involved in the offense. That doesn't necessarily mean give him more tons of post-ups. It doesn't even necessarily mean give him more post-ups. The only option for him is not post-ups. You can run more pick and roll with him. If you remember Adams, his usage in those final two preseason games was crazy. He was putting up shot after shot, and he was making them. One of his best traits offensively is just as a ball screener. And they can find him in the pick and roll more. And there are certain ways in which you can get him more involved. It's not going to happen every single night. It's not going to happen depending on how defense plays. Like, there were some games where team strategies were, okay, let's take away the pick and roll pass to Adams. Turn Westbrook into a scorer. Let's take away that little pocket pass that Russ likes to throw to Adams. When that's taken away, Adams isn't going to get as many chances. He's not going to get as many chances as that floater that he likes off those pocket passes from Russ. It's just a different situation. And I don't love the idea of posting up Adams 7 times in a game or something like that. Like, that's not what I'm saying at all. But I do think he's a good offensive player now. He's a good passer. He's a good scorer. He's got moves. He's got touch around the basket. He's a good offensive player. And they're playing Sabonis around the perimeter. Now post-ups are tough in this offense because there's just not a lot of space. And Adams still kind of dribbles with his head down. If you come over with another defender, like, he has a propensity to turn it over sometimes. So I understand not wanting to post up all the time, but I do think there are certain actions, certain sets in which you can get Steven Adams the ball a little bit more. Get his usage up a little bit more, because I do agree. I think he's a good player and he can score more. Now, I also think some of it comes on Steven Adams. Steven Adams has never been a guy in his professional career. He wasn't a guy in his collegiate career either, who you could give the ball, who you could look to, and he had that I'm going to score here mentality. I think part of that, Steven's like really, really an unselfish guy. He really doesn't have an ego. I think he's confident for sure. But he doesn't have an ego. And I think he's a guy who often, so he talks about, like, you'll see him warming up and stuff, and he'll be working on mid-range game and that kind of stuff. And he kind of drains from mid-range. So I asked him once, like, what's your process in that? Why are you taking these mid-range shots? And is that something that you'll ever take in a game? Because I see you taking them every day in mid-range. Those mid-range every day in practice, every day in shoot around, every day before the game. And I've never seen you put one up in a game. And he said to me that, like, his workout process has been exactly the same since he entered the league. He was working on the same post moves. He was working on the same shots, all that kind of stuff. And he doesn't like to do something in a game until he's completely confident that it's really good. Now, he also acknowledged to me that, you know, long twos are not efficient shots. And unless you're, like, insanely good at them, because Steven understands the mathematics of the game very well, unless you're really good at them, it's not an efficient shot. Unless you're, as he put it, unless you're as good as Enes Kanter, then it's not an efficient shot. And Kanter is a very good shooter, so those open shots are fine for him. But Adams is a guy who really likes to master his craft before he uses them in the game. And I think one thing that he needs to do in that process, so he's been working on, like, these post moves. He's been doing these same workout routines since he came in the league. He didn't just, like, work on his post game this year, and now all of a sudden he's good. This is a culmination of at least 3 years in the pros. I don't know what his workout routine was like before he came to the Thunder when he was at Pittsburgh and such. But at least 3 years of, you know, working with Mark Bryant, who's the big man's coach, who's been with the Thunder. Heck, he was with the Sonics, so he's been around forever. And then this year he finally figured, all right, now I'm good enough. Now I'm confident enough to bust a lot of this stuff out in a game. And I think the mentality of, all right, give me the ball. Now me actually taking these shots, me making these moves, this is the best thing for my team. Because Steven doesn't want to do something that he doesn't think is the best for the team. So he's always been wired as, me taking over is a little bit selfish, even if it's for a possession, two possessions, whatever it is. In the context of the game, for the most part, me taking over is selfish. I think he needs to get to a point where he realizes that a lot of the time, he just wants to go off and take 30 shots. Like, yeah, of course. But a lot of the time, when he gets one-on-one matchups, when he gets the ball down low, when he gets the ball really deep in the paint, whether it's off of a pass from the perimeter, whether it's on a post-up when he's sealing a guy off, whether it's in the pick-and-roll, whatever, when he gets those looks and those opportunities, that's the best thing for the team. For him to try to score on those, for him to maybe facilitate something for somebody else on those, as opposed to giving them back out. And I think that's a mentality that can be created. I don't know. I shouldn't say that, because I don't know if... I don't know. It's probably specific to the individual on that one. I'm sure for some people it is. For some people that you can create that. And some people maybe you can't. Maybe some people don't develop that. I'm not going to pretend to know Steven Adams well enough to say, oh, he can definitely be like this, he can't be like this. I don't know how to project that kind of stuff in people. Like, I don't even know if I can project that kind of stuff in, you know, people I've known my whole life, like my brother or my parents or whatever, like that kind of stuff. I don't know. So that kind of stuff I think is really hard to project, and I'm just going to wait and see if it happens. I know sometimes you can develop that mentality, and some people can't. I don't know which one Steven is. He's a really good player either way. No question about that. But I do think it would be good for the Thunder if they could work some more shots for him, because they need some offense. They're ranked near the bottom of the league in offensive efficiency right now. And Steven Adams is a good option for offense. That was a long answer. From Zach, a long answer to a statement that wasn't a question. If that wasn't a question, then what was mine? I guess it was just a response. It wasn't an answer. Next one from Zach Dwyer. Oh, and here's a silly question. Here's what Zach Dwyer has. It's a silly question. Another Steven Adams thing. It's a silly question, but is Steven Adams now the Thunder's best free throw shooter? No, he's not the Thunder's best free throw shooter. But he's been good. I forgot what I was going to say. I was asking Billy Donovan a question after the game today, and I forgot my question before I asked it. And then Billy called me out on forgetting my question. that was a fun time. I had like a panic moment. I was like, oh crap, this isn't happening again. Then I remembered it, and that was good. Is Steven Adams the best free throw shooter? No, he's not the best free throw shooter. But the reason I brought this question up is because Steven Adams is now, seven for seven against Toronto. He's now 17 for 18 on the season. He was a 50-some-odd percent shooter in his career from the line. And now he is making his free throws at a remarkably high rate to start the season. Small sample size. I highly doubt Steven Adams is going to shoot like 90-something percent from the line this year. I would not put my money on that. But good for Steven Adams. He shot 50 in the 50s for most of the beginning of his career. And it looks like that phase, I feel comfortable saying that phase is over. That seems really possible. So that's a cool thing for Steven Adams, and that makes him a lot more playable. And not that he was unplayable in any scenarios, but it should make Billy Donovan even more comfortable with keeping him on the floor, because that's a great thing. And sometimes guys, if they go through bad stretches where they're missing a lot of free throws, they can shy away from contact, and it can affect the way they score. Like, the greatest example of this ever, where free throw shooting just destroyed a guy, was Andres Biedrins. Look up Andres Biedrins with the Golden State Warriors. Only a few years ago, I think he averaged a double-double 1 year. And he wasn't even a horrible free throw shooter. Like, he wasn't even like a DeAndre Jordan as a free throw shooter. He wasn't the best free throw shooter in the league, but he wasn't even that bad. And then all of a sudden, he started missing free throws. And he was so afraid to go to the line. He was so afraid to go to the line that the last thing he wanted to do in any scenario while he was on the court was create contact. It was unbelievable just watching this guy completely change because he was so afraid of going to the line. And like 2 years later, he was out of the league. He spent 2 years where he just stopped going to the free throw line. He lost his effectiveness completely because everything that he did was just trying not to go to the line. And then he was out of the league. It was such a crazy career. That's a unique career. Don't worry, I'm not saying that's Steven Adams. That was a stream of consciousness moment. And that was the most extreme example. But it's something that we see on much smaller scales all the time, where guys are a little bit afraid to go to the line. And when you're making your free throws, and you can make those contact plays where you can fight with a guy, and you're like, heck yeah, I'm going to the free throw line. This is great. 2 points. And that's what you're thinking because you're shooting well. Yeah, it can have a small effect on the rest of your game. I buy that. From Glazed and Consumed. I feel I know the answer, but does anyone, player or coach, ever call Russ on his BS when he's jacking up threes? I mean, I still love Rusty and can live with a game here and there, but should someone say something? So Russell Westbrook was 3 of 12 from 3 tonight. A lot of pull-up threes. Look, Russell Westbrook does lots of great things. Paradox with Russell Westbrook, and the reason he gets criticized, is because his flaws are obvious ones. He takes some bad shots sometimes. No one's denying that. The biggest supporters of Russell Westbrook will tell you he takes some bad shots sometimes. Like, maybe they won't say it with that phrasing. Like, even Billy Donovan every once in a while is like, Russ shot too much. So tonight, Billy said that he thought they took too many threes. They took some threes they shouldn't. He didn't say what I'm about to say, but I thought it was, in some ways, him talking about, well, I shouldn't say, I thought some of those threes that he was thinking people shouldn't have taken, some of those could have been those Westbrook pull-ups. Yeah, sure. Here's the thing. Yeah, people say that to Russell. And Russell knows. Russell isn't this, like, loose cannon who has no idea. He is really, really obsessed with getting better. Like, that's not narrative. Sometimes it is. Sometimes people just like push this stuff because they want to push it. Russell's like really obsessed with getting better. It's amazing when you see him and you're just around him. Like, he is a crazy competitor. And when you're a crazy competitor, like, you want to hear that stuff. You want to hear how you're better. And yes, look, Billy Donovan is not walking up to Russell Westbrook and talking to him like a Twitter egg. He's not talking to him like like a hot take talking head. You have to take fewer shots. I looked at the box score and you took 12 threes and you only made 3 of them. You can't do that. That's not what he's saying. That's my terrible Billy Donovan impression. Not as good as Dion Waiters' Billy Donovan impression. That's not what Billy Donovan is doing. What he's doing is when they look at film, I imagine, he's saying to Russ, like, hey, Russ, this is, you know, a play where maybe you could have done this. Look at what was open on this play. Or look at what the defense was giving you. And if the defense was giving him the 3, then he's probably not saying it. He's probably happy with it because the defense was giving him the 3. Now, I think Westbrook could cut out some of his 3s, for sure. I think there are smart ways to communicate it, though. I think sometimes people get too caught up in the message of what's being communicated than they are than in the way that it is being communicated. What good coaches do, and what good communicators do, what good teachers do. What coaches are teachers, and what a good teacher does is a good teacher takes maybe a message that could be conveyed as aggressive, and gives it in a way that still teaches the exact same lesson, but in an accepting fashion. Maybe sometimes you need to be aggressive, but you don't need to be aggressive for someone like Russell. That's not the way you approach that. You don't need to approach it like that. He doesn't need that. And so, yes, people are telling him that. It's in his DNA to take those shots. The thing with Russell is that you don't want to limit his aggression. You can't. Because all of his best traits come from that. All of the traits that make him one of the most incredible basketball players in the world come from that. And if you limit his aggression in some ways, you put losing it in the best ways at risk. And that's just not a risk that's worth taking. It's not a risk that's worth taking. But it's not necessarily addressed in the way that a Twitter egg would address it. Remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. You can head on to iTunes and subscribe to Locked On Thunder. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com, and you can find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs, and check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage and what's next for the team there. Clippers on Friday. I'll be doing a preview tomorrow. I'm excited for the preview. I am not going to say yet what the preview is, just in case it falls through, but I am excited. I am excited for the preview, so that's going to be up at its normal time for Friday morning, getting ready for the Clippers game on Friday. Until next time, though, Locked On Thunder is locking up.